Hi, this is Steve Snowball Sailor, and you're listening to 10 years of This Week in Geek.
Wow, we're old.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world. And TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of This Week in Geek. This Week in Geek.
It's true, man, our bromance knows no boundaries. So moving on to fuckstick here. You want to know why Laidman's a fuckstick, guys?
Yeah, where did this come from?
Because you saw Scott Pilgrim versus the World and not me, you whore.
Hey, guys, what's going on? This is Mike the Birdman Dodd, and you are listening to 10 years of ThisWeekInGeek.net. Believe me, I don't know how you put up with my shit for this long.
I'm Frank Welker,
Megatron, leader of the Decepticons.
In case you haven't heard, it's Reveal Your Shield Week. So make sure to declare whether you are Decepticon or an Autobot.
You little... Failure is not an option. Decepticon detected.
I have returned.
Oh boy.
Hello and welcome to the Nerd News Network here on This Week in Geek. I am, of course, TFG and Mike. Joining me is Ryan the Uneven Flow Merkley. Hello, sir.
It's not 8:52. It's only 6:30. I mean, hello.
Yes, hello. Mike the Birdman.
I don't know why I take so much joy in ruining your show. I just...
It's not... Well, yeah, technically it is my show now, because really...
No comment. Anyway,
So Mike the Birdman Dodd was going to join us, but something came up. He's doing good. He's doing well. He is continuing on his path of losing weight and things like that, and everything is going well. We do have the contest, which will be announced at the end of this episode. The contest winner will be announced. So the Logitech G8 keyboard contest is now over as of this episode, folks. And tune in to
I'd like to congratulate myself on winning a new keyboard. It's odd. I didn't even really need one, but, you know.
The hosts and employees of This Week in Geek are not eligible to compete in these contests.
Well, as you pointed out last week, I'm not an employee because you don't pay me.
It's community service work. We're doing a service to the Canadian and U.S. communities here. Come on now.
Speaking of the Canadian to U.S. communities, I know you, artist. Oh, anyway. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, run with it.
I will go straight into it then. All right. So one of the stories that came out would have been last week, actually. Well, Friday.
Mm. Yeah.
But one of the artists on Gem and the Holograms, Giselle Legace, do not know which. My apologies to her for probably butchering her last name. But anyway, she lives up here in Canada, works for IDW, has done a number of issues of the current Gem and the Holograms comic, and she's done a number of Archie comics and some quite a bit of other sort of freelance work. And, oh, excuse me, as my stomach decides to cough out on me. So anyway, she was headed to the U.S. to C2E2 and was stopped at the border and not allowed entry into the United States. This obviously puts a damper on her opportunity to show up at the convention.
Yeah.
Basically, it seems like their biggest issue was that essentially she was taking work that she had done in Canada and then selling it in the U.S.
Mm.
As if she was, you know, making money. The issue with this is that's pretty much the definition of most artists, and most convention artists, this is exactly what they do. The other issue is that, in general, this has never been a problem until recently. Gee, I wonder what's changed in terms of Canada-U.S. relations. It's never been a problem to cross the border. Now, when you cross the border or fly through the U.S. even, there's a lot more questions and that sort of thing than there was before. And, yeah, this is not a good thing. This is not something that entices people or makes them want to come through the U.S. I mean, tourism numbers for the U.S. Have dropped dramatically in the past few months. I'm trying real hard to dance around this, but anyway.
He's dancing around the fact that we are trumping the pence here in the U.S., folks.
Yeah, because things are not great, especially if you were trying to visit. And I'm going to be blunt. I'm a white, big white dude. Canadian. I've lived in Canada pretty much my entire life. I've spent a significant amount of time in the States as well. And I've lived in New Zealand for a chunk of time too. So anyway, but you know, I'm born, raised Canadian. It's a pain in the ass for me to go through at this point. There's a lot of extra questions that weren't there before. And for the record, the questions do nothing. I could just lie through my teeth on them. They'd never know the difference. It's just,
it's a nightmare. Good.
It's, you know, not pleasant, and I'm going to be blunt. It's not that bad on me. All I get is a couple extra questions. I suspect if I were, say, a different ethnicity, I would probably have to answer more questions. And I am saying that I have seen that in action. So
yeah, it's not good.
No, and stuff like this is unfortunate, especially for the convention scene, because... IDW, who, you know, for example, you're a definite fan of a number of the different IDW books.
Yeah.
The majority of their employees come from Canada because that's where they're based.
Yep.
And it's just a matter of, you know, convenience for them, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so, this is a nightmare, folks. I mean, she was coming to go to a convention.
Yeah, like, is that really a threat to national security?
Yeah, really. I mean, seriously.
No, her gem in the hologram art is going to subvert the U.S. hold on South Korea and result in World War III. No.
Yeah, and the next thing you know, we're going to have walls at both ends of this country. You know how they always say a certain place is, like I said it about 4 months ago. California is a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. Well, at this point, the United States isn't a nice place to visit, and most people don't want to live here anymore.
I think in terms of, you know, you got to ask, and, you know, I'm going to be honest here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different places to go in the world, and if you're more likely to receive harassment or if it's going to be a hassle to get into a country like the U.S., you might just decide to, you know, go elsewhere. And... again, you know, I'm probably not the best person to be talking about this because I'm fairly well-traveled and I've lived here my life.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I'm a pretty, you know, not scary white dude, especially as I get older and my hair continues to gray. But,
you know, there's an easy way to fix that.
Well, it's not falling out. Actually, I kind of like the gray hair, too. So.
So what you're saying is you're the Canadian version of Mr. Fantastic?
Oh, I'm Mr. Fantastic, all right. Just ask the lady.
Okay.
So, no, this is a problem. And, you know, joking aside for a second, and politics aside, I don't find this helps anybody.
No, it doesn't help you them. Know? It doesn't help them.
I think it makes the borders any safer or anything like that. I think it just encourages people to not come.
Yep.
And you want that tourism money. That's a huge part of the economy in the United States, in Canada, Mexico, any country.
Yeah.
And people generally don't travel to places just to cause trouble. I mean, it's a significantly low percentage
Yeah,
I have a much better chance of getting, you know, killed by somebody on Rideau Street than I do from a foreigner or anything like that. So,
yeah, it's just
Rideau
crazy.
Street's the rough and tumble downtown of Ottawa, by the way, which by the way is like the wussiest rough and tumble ever. So,
yeah, I mean Tremont Street in Boston is tougher than that. Anyway,
pretty much anything is. I mean, you know, hockey sticks are our weapon of choice. Everybody knows that here. So, speaking of not needing hockey sticks, how are the Bruins?
Hey, you ass. So, I didn't realize, just like you didn't realize, that the gem artist story came out of C2E2 when we first looked at it, and kind of ties into my first story because announced at C2E2 this past weekend. The next big thing Marvel panel happened, and they basically announced saying that they're going to go back to the original numbering with another relaunch. God.
Yay.
Look, I wrote out this long, drawn-out reply to a comic writer, creator on Facebook. I'm not going to reread that, but I'm going to paraphrase it. As long as the story is not affected by a renumbering, like returning to number one, the example I used in the comment was, you look at IDW. We all do. We all should. From their inception of the two main Transformers series, Robots in Disguise and More Than Meets the Eye, those two comic series ran for almost 5.5 years. They went from issue 1 to issue 57 of each, right? They each had 57. Okay. After that, they relaunched to number one, and they retitled the series Optimus Prime for Robots in Disguise and The Lost Light for More Than Meets the Eye. What did not happen with that, so they took 5 years of two different comic series and built them up, built the continuity, built the stories. What did not happen when the numbering changed with IDW is that the story did not get lost. That's my biggest fear when I see renumbering, going back to this number, going back, is that the story is going to change. Now, you said something to me about this off-air about the Black Panther comic. You want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah, I'll go into it. Yeah, Black Panther, for example. I rarely, at this point, buy issues. I've been reading stuff in trades. Black Panther Volume 3 came out, and I've really enjoyed it so far. But essentially, the first two-thirds of Volume 3 wrap up the majority of the storylines that have been set up over a year within the comics. And it's doing this in order to set the stage for... I can't even remember what the hell the last event was called. It's the one with the convergence where, you know, the universes merged, etc. I honestly can't remember it. So anyway, the first two-thirds, roughly, of the book is dedicated to that. Mm-hmm. And then the last portion of it is just coming out of the... is, you know, it's just coming out of nowhere, and it's working into those... working into that storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, like, if you enjoyed the past year or so of comics with that, screw you. We're just going to set up our event. So as it relates to what you said, in terms of continuing the storyline, IDW did that, and it absolutely has bombed for them. I've enjoyed Lost Light, I've enjoyed Optimus Prime, and I'm enjoying Till All Are One, each of the series. Till All Are One didn't restart.
Yeah, Till All Are One did not restart.
But Optimus Prime and The Lost Light are A, restarts, and B, they continued the same storylines, but they did change their name. And in any case, that's resulted in roughly a third of their sales that they were getting before. So this concept that the number ones are always going to sell and that kind of thing is not true anymore, because it's a broken business model, and it doesn't always work that well.
Now, do you think, in your personal opinion, that with the... Now, we don't want to see John Barber or James Roberts go anywhere for writing, because we both enjoy what they're doing on each of those series. And now, I have not read Optimus... I'm not up to speed on the current IDW stuff. I'm still going through the old stuff. If you head on over to the pull bag with Autobotly April, you'll hear, be able to hear that, folks. But it's one of those things... Do you think if they did the title change and the renumbering and they did a creative team change, do you think that would have boosted their sales or no?
I don't think so, especially in More Than Meets the Eye's case. I think it would have crippled it, if anything.
Yeah.
One of the other issue is you need quality to sustain after the number one. So the reason before, when I was doing the talking about Black Panther and I keep kind of like cutting off briefly, it's because I'm reading the gigantic ass Twitter thread that the one woman sent you. Yeah. And holy shit, do I not agree with this. So the problem here is that the concept of, you know, she says it's not necessarily quality that matters, that kind of thing. It's people flock to number ones. The days of that are long past at this point. The number one doesn't attract what it used to. It can give you a momentary boost in sales, but it's quality that actually keeps people there. The other issue is the model itself is broken at this point. It's not just the concept of issue one, issue two, that kind of thing that's messed up. The actual comic production model is screwed. It's the same. One of the stories I probably should have added to Nerd News this week, because it was one of my favorite stories this week, was Cliff Bleszinski, formerly of Epic Games, basically the, you know, the guy who did Gears of War, saying that AAA gaming is not sustainable. It's costing too much money to make games. It creates unrealistic expectation on returns, and people just aren't as willing to spend enough money to make it back now. Bingo. That's pretty much the same issue with comics right now. And this woman's point, who I'm inevitably going to end up arguing with on Facebook, that the comics industry is currently relying desperately on, you know, the 50, 60-year-olds, people, that kind of thing. Not remotely true. I mean, go to a convention. The convention scene is as diverse and as varied as it gets. And now, you know, there's some people that are going to say, well, they don't buy comics. No, that's not true. I've seen them come out with a shitload of trades, and I spend about $400 per Comic-Con on trades alone, minimum. And some of these people are buying more than me. So, yeah. No, they're definitely spending money on it.
And part of her argument is that comics is a business. They're in the business to make money. Well, we're the ones making them the money. We're, you know, they spend the money to produce the comics, to hire the writers and the artists and do all the work, and then they come out at a certain price point, whether it's $2.99, $3.99, $4.99, $5.99, $6.99, and so on and so forth, for us to buy them. For us to make their money back for them, because that's the whole point. You create content, you sell it to your fans. If your fans buy it, you make the money back. I'm sorry, there's no way in hell if Marvel at this point, Marvel has done how many relaunches now? I know DC's done at least three, but Marvel, I don't know how many different ones that they've done in the last 15 years. Just the last 15 years out of the last 90 years of comics.
And DC's done a shitload too.
So I know they have.
They're both guilty, but yeah.
Right.
It doesn't make one right or the other wrong, by the way. Just
right. No, it doesn't. And I'm not saying that one, you know, yeah, like you said. My point is that if a new number one comes out and it's a double issue or a triple size issue, the price point goes up. You know, most double size issues are instead of 22 or 24 pages, they're usually 42 or 48 or whatever it is. And most of those prices are either, for DC, most of them are either $5.99 or $6.99. I don't know what they are for Marvel. And it's just, I'm sorry, I am not. I will wait until a number one goes on sale.
Yeah, and I also say conversely too. You're mentioning, you know, we're the people that support them. The other issue for me right now is I just finished the, you know, I just got the trade last night. That's when my comic guy delivers them. And I haven't finished. I've got Captain America Volume 2, Mockingbird Volume 2. A whole bunch of DC titles that are under Saga Volume 7, so I can't see what they are. Anyway, so I got a bunch of these to finish yet. But anyway, back to Black Panther. I know the original author is continuing after the event, but I got to tell you, I'm pissed off. Like, I'm not sure I'm going to stick with it. And yeah. I enjoyed everything up until then. This constant sort of resetting, or this constant feeling of, okay, all of our chess pieces have to be in this position in order for us to continue on with this title, so you're going to have to move everyone around and everything around so it's in this perfect shape for a crossover that's going to, you know, be 20 different issues that you're going to have to collect. No, I'm not interested in that. And Secret Empire, for example, a storyline that's been set up that I actually kind of enjoy. But Secret Empire Zero just came out, and it's five issues to get the full story. Hell with that. Like, I got sent those issues, so I've read it, and I enjoy the setup. I think it's interesting. But I'm not going to continue on with it. Not at $25 a week or so for, you know, each piece of the story to maintain it. Like, the hell with that. And I have the money for it. Easily, but like, I don't care enough. I can't justify that much. It's bad enough I spend insane amounts on trades every week. But like, no, I can't. This is not a sustainable business plan, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's not sustainable for long-term fans. You might get short-term fans in, but as soon as they get annoyed with something, they're just going to drop it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe the writer they like leaves, so they drop it, or that kind of thing. I don't think this is sustainable in terms of getting people on board and then sticking with it. Although, having said that, we're such an instant gratification society. Maybe those days are gone. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure, because you're right. We are such an instant gratification society. And I think in one of my replies on that thread on Facebook was, I haven't bought a print I plan on buying some trades. I was buying trades, but I have not bought a print comic since 2014, because I buy all my stuff digitally, because I'm on my computer all the time. And
also, it's cheaper.
Yeah. And it's less space. You know, I mean, granted, I'm sure, heaven forbid this ever happens, but if Comixology or Amazon lets Comixology ever implode or explode, then I remember a buddy of mine, at Scanner51 on Twitter, said something one time about something about his comic. This is before they were bought by Amazon, I think. Something about his Comixology account kind of exploding and deleting everything or something or other. Yeah. But anyway, the point is, like, I don't buy physical copies anymore. I just don't. I would rather... Do I still buy number ones, or do I still buy single issues? It depends on the series. It depends on the company. It depends on what it is. Yeah. I'm not constantly buying single. Like, 2014 till about end of 2015, for about a year or so, I used the Comixology subscription thing where, you know, as soon as the new issue came out, as long as I was subscribed to it, boom, it would show up and I would get charged. And I haven't done that in a while. But it's just one of those things where the comics industry, with geek culture, it's a give and take. They, as I said before, they do all the production, they do all the creation to give us the stories that we hopefully will enjoy reading, and we buy the stuff to make them money. Now, I don't know what digital sales are for a Comixology. We all know and have heard that the Apple developer thing is 70-30. You know, I don't know what the Comixology Amazon thing is.
IDW has one of the highest digital rates of any of the major companies, and it's roughly a third is what they've said.
Okay.
So the digital sales are, you know, and they're high. So let's, you know, let's say Marvel or DC are probably around 20 percent or so of what they sell in print, which is a decent amount, but not a huge amount. But IDW, for them, a lot of their money is in the digital right now. For them, too, it's a matter of distribution, that kind of thing, because they're here in Canada. So,
yeah. The other thing about numbering, I've said this before. I've said this for the last 4 to 5 years. As a kid, I read comics sporadically at best. I was not a kid that I had a baseball card collection bigger than my comic. I didn't have a comic collection as a kid. I had toy collections. I had, you know, all kinds of other collections, but I was not super heavy into comics. And in 2012, 2013, I dove in head first. And like I said, up till about 2015, I was buying all the stuff in print and everything else. And then I went digital. For me, specifically DC, I'm going to use them as an example. My biggest fear of jumping on to Fantastic Four, 644, 6, whatever it is, that means, oh shit, I have to go back and read the previous 643 issues. So that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed the New 52, was that it was characters like Nightwing and Batgirl and Batman. Nightwing and Batgirl more so than Batman, but, you know, it was characters I knew of, and it was the Nightwing series, specifically with Kyle Higgins, was written in the style of remembering the old Batman the Animated Series and things like that and whatever else, because he was a fan of that. So I didn't mind the New 52 changeover because I was not as it. I didn't have, you know, 70 years of attachment to comics that had come out since the 30s, 40s, and 50s. So, but now when it comes to numbering, I don't know.
It's tough because you got to gauge, you know, people who feel the way you do versus people now. I have to wonder, too. And so this is probably a topic we could just talk about like an entire show on.
Yeah.
And hopefully get people a lot smarter than me on to talk about it and get some, you know, maybe somebody that works at comic shops, that kind of thing. But I wonder, too, if the way comics are written is affecting it. I've talked about this a few times, that most of my favorite writers write in story arcs. Mm-hmm. Jason Aaron, Brian K. Vaughan, Mark Wade, you know, Greg Rucka. These are all people that, you know, some of my favorite comic writers. But you don't see the one or two issue stories anymore. When you buy a comic nowadays, it's generally a 6-issue story, and it's contained in that arc, if not, you know, many more. So I wonder if that affects it, too. The idea that, you know, if you stay tuned and watch next month, that's a veiled reference to Batman 66. You know, if you stay tuned and watch the next episode, you'll see the second part. Well, if you stay tuned and, you know, buy next month, you don't see the second part anymore. It's keep on buying, keep on buying. There's no sort of end. The ends to the stories only happen every 6th issue, if even that. Now, I'm a fan of long-form storytelling, but I wonder, too, if something's been lost there, or, you know, do people miss those one or two, you know, issue arcs? Like the old, you know, the old X-Men comics, you'd get, you know, maybe this story is only one or two issues, or during the Claremont run or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know, because that's another thing that's kind of disappeared.
Yeah, it is. Like I mentioned earlier, Pat Shand, who is a comic writer, was working at the time for Xenoscope Entertainment. Xenoscope had done to celebrate their 10-year anniversary, they had done 6 one-shots of their various Grim Fairy Tales characters. So each comic was a specific one-shot story. And I don't mind that because it's focusing on one character's arc or one character's story and telling us a one-shot story. At the same time, giving, you know how comics are. They'll give us footnotes. Oh, if you want to read that, you can check this out or whatever else. But it's not necessarily something where you have to, like, take Death of the Family, for example, please. The second Scott Snyder run, the second Scott Snyder story in the New 52 Batman. That ran from issues 13 to 17 of Batman. It also tied into Batgirl, Nightwing, and various other... It had several different tie-ins, like you mentioned earlier. Now, because I enjoy the characters of Batgirl and Nightwing, yeah, I was going to grab those. But it was one of those things where I don't want an event having to make me read 30 different comics to get the whole story. If you can't put your event in 6 issues or less... Even 8 issues or less, then there's something wrong there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different... I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. Like, I disagree with some of the things the person, you know, arguing with you said. I sort of disagree with some of the things you're saying. I think for every different comic book reader, the answer's different... But in the end, the result is the same, that comic sales overall are waning. It's not just Marvel. You know, DC's been bleeding them. Like, I remember the days when at Marvel and DC, if you didn't sell 22,000 issues a month, your comic was getting canceled.
Mm-hmm.
There are companies now, and there are books right now, who are happy with 8,000 in sales. So, I mean, we're not talking about, what was it? It was X-Men 1, the double-sized one when it relaunched.
Mm-hmm.
It's, if I remember correctly, it's still the highest-selling comic of all time. It sold 2 million issues. That's never going to happen again. So, I mean, they're not even comparing it to those days, though. This is only a few years ago.
Yeah.
When, you know, 22,000 was your cutoff, and now, you know, your cutoff is well below that. It's... Part of it's the medium, too. I wonder if... I don't know. Like I said, this is something that...
Yeah, this is a larger topic for later.
Yeah, I need somebody way smarter than me to talk about it. I just wonder if the medium... You know, listen, we talk about this on Crossplug on Mayhem Mics.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned it a few times, too, that... wrestling, for example, is way down over where it was about 20 years ago. Well, less than that, about 19 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, granted, that was kind of a golden age, but I mean, they can't even get a portion, like a fraction of that anymore.
Yeah.
And has media and have tastes and that kind of thing gone away from these things? I don't know. Like, you know, another example, Star Trek The Next Generation, one of the strongest sci-fi shows of all time. And it was actually one of the most popular shows of all time. But anyway, used to get, you know, insane ratings per week. It used to beat Monday Night Football some weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The Expanse is one of the best sci-fi shows on right now, and it can barely achieve 500,000 viewers. And the show's still running, and they're happy with that. The issue, I think, is just media and our consumption of media have really changed. And maybe the expectation for comics hasn't changed enough in terms of people buying. I don't know, but it seems like all of our media is just shifting, and how we consume it is shifting. And I don't know that comics has done a good enough job keeping up with it. You know, we mentioned the comic sales over and over again. I wonder how Marvel Unlimited does. That's their subscription service, for example.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people are subscribed to that, because I know Andrew, who we podcast with on occasion when I can remember to send him the link to show up. But Andrew, for example, has gone to that. He doesn't buy comics anymore. He just pays for the subscription. Mm-hmm. And granted, they get the issues a month or two late, but honestly, it's not a lot different than what I do, which is wait for trades.
Yeah. The only issue I have with the Marvel Unlimited, or even the Comixology Unlimited, is that, as far as I know, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, it's basically the Netflix and Hulu model, where, you know, you pay a certain price and you can read all these comics, but in a couple of months they're all going to change, and some that you've read that you may want to reread aren't going to be there anymore. Is that true or untrue?
Thus far, they haven't been removing them.
Okay.
Now, that's a good question, though. I'll ask Andrew if that's part of the agreement or something, because, I mean, it would say somewhere they'd have to, you know, that can happen. The other issue with it too is a pretty obvious one, and that is there's no DC.
Yeah.
What the hell, DC? I wish they would make one, because I'd love to go through a lot of the back stuff that I, you know, is long before I was reading and hasn't been reprinted forever. So
yeah. All right. What else you got for this week?
I don't know. Wasn't that long enough? That was
like All right. I got one. So you know how the entire world is going crazy that the NES Classic is disappearing and being discontinued? Well, it's possibly because of the fact that Nintendo is presumably making a SNES Classic.
Yeah, which is interesting because I've heard a reason. I cannot confirm this, but I have heard that some of the reasoning too was they weren't happy with how popular the NES was. Because it's more popular than the Switch is in North America. The Switch has done well in Japan, though, which they're certainly concerned about, obviously. Like, they're happy that it's doing well, is what I'm trying to say there. Anyway, but it's done well in North America, but not as well as they want. The demand's not as high. So I've also heard that that's a possibility. Personally, I'm hoping for the SNES Classic over that, obviously.
Yeah. The SNES Mini would be awesome. It really, really would. Because that was... And I think I've told you this story. I may have said it here on Nerd News or somewhere else on Geekcast Radio or something, but when I was a kid, I grew up with the Atari 2600. My first video game system, sad as it was, Sega Master System. So, in 1991, 1992, when the Super Nintendo came out, I immediately knew what I wanted for Christmas in 1992.
Sega Genesis. I was,
hell no!
Oh, ooh.
I like the Genesis, I do, but I had already had a Sega system, and I'm like, yeah, because for me, I had the Sega system. My three cousins, Rachel, Robbie, and Cassie, they had the Nintendo Entertainment System. So anytime I'd go over to their house, we'd be playing Duck Hunt or Mario or whatever, yeah. Excite Bike, all that stuff. Anyway, when they were at my house, they'd play the Master System. Alex Kidd and the Lost Stars.
Those poor kids, yeah.
Yeah, I know, right? So when the Super came out, I was like, oh, yes, absolutely. And I absolutely loved it and still love it to this day. So... A SNES Mini would be awesome. That would be really, really, really awesome.
I'd like to see them do that. I'd like to see Sega do something similar as well, the old Genesis titles. But a lot of them are also available on other systems and platforms. So maybe that's... You know, the thing with the Nintendo is, for whatever reason, they don't... Or they've chosen not to open up the back catalog all that often. And when they do, it's questionable. Like, I mean, for example, to be honest, the Virtual Console is kind of a mess. It's difficult to find things. It's difficult to browse. It's not super high profile on their systems. It's getting better, but it needs an awful lot of work. It's like comparing the Windows Store to Steam. You can't find anything, and it's not as, you know, laid out all that well, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, they've got some of this stuff is available there, but it's not high profile, and it's not, I don't know, there's something about the NES Mini that helped, too. I mean, the obvious thing that helped a lot was the fact that, you know, it had the NES controllers.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's much easier, more fun to play with those than it is on a Switch Wii Stick. Stick or whatever. So,
yeah, that's one of the biggest gripes, and I know I've said this plenty of times on Twig and GCR and everywhere else. That's my biggest complaint for a lot of video game systems nowadays, is that for me, because of my mild case of cerebral palsy at a young age with the Nintendo controller, I taught myself how to play video games one-handed. And Xbox more so than PlayStation, the controllers are 2 miles wide. obviously I'm exaggerating there, but for me, that's what they feel like. They may as well be, because I can't, if I can't hold a controller in my hand, how I do it is, and I've got a picture of this with a Super Nintendo controller, I'll have to put it in the post. I cradle the bottom of it in my hand, and I use my thumb for the buttons and my either my ring finger or my pinky for the D-pad. And as gaming has gone on and the technology has gotten better, they've added, you know, shock sticks and this, that, and the other thing, and in-screen controller, iPad-looking thingamabobs and whatever else, and it's just not for me. I just don't. I don't play a lot of current games. Would I want to play a lot of current games? Do I want? Yeah, sure. I'd love to if I could hold the fucking controller.
To be fair, I mean, at least like with the, man, I'm gonna come out sounding as Mr. PC Master Race as usual. But whatever. I mean, at least with the PC, you've got the option. I mean, you can buy the USB NES controllers, which I can attest are really good quality. Remakes. And so, yeah, if you get the games, and there's plenty of indie games where you really only need the two buttons, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, something like that's kind of an option. But, yeah, in terms of console gaming, I mean, one of the things I've had some sort of discussions and that kind of thing with, now I can't remember the name of the place. That's great. the charity that works with trying to help disabled gamers.
Okay.
And there's not a whole lot of options console-wise. It's slowly getting better. But I'm trying to remember who it was. But recently, I think it was Overwatch, actually. It was one of the online games recently had an issue where they determined that any sort of non-registered or non... Oh, no, never mind. It was PlayStation Network. PlayStation determined... that PlayStation with Overwatch, there we go, were the ones that determined any sort of mouse and keyboard with the PlayStation 4 would be considered cheating online. And the idea was to make an even playing field, because a mouse and keyboard generally gives an advantage aiming, so people are using that on PS4 using adapters to game the system. The problem here is those same adapters, though, were constructed so that the disabled could use them to play games like Overwatch and the like. So these adapters are originally meant for them, not for, you know, people plugging in a mouse and keyboard to, you know, be better at Overwatch then. So I remember when the story came out, it was a big deal, because at risk were the people that were enjoying it for... you know, the reason that those adapters were constructed. So they need to find a better way of policing that. And yeah, it would be nice if in general the consoles would find better ways to adapt to... It'll be interesting, because, I mean, VR technology has some really good potential, at least in that area.
I actually did... I don't know why I did it, but last year sometime... I did a YouTube video, and it's very rare that I do YouTube videos anymore, but I did a YouTube video where I actually showed myself, with the disability that I have, the mild case of cerebral palsy, how I sit here and play PC games. Like, I've been playing Grand Theft Auto for almost 10 years at this point, since the game's been out, Grand Theft Auto 4 specifically. I use the game as more of a stress reliever than anything else. Yeah, I go through the mission and things like that, but once I'm done with that, I just... end up finding cheat codes and just going and having a blast and taking stress out on myself. But what I showed was how, because of my cerebral palsy and not being able to use my right hand, how I could use the keyboard and go back and forth between the keyboard and the mouse, you know, fairly easily. The same thing with the Need for Speed franchise. You know, I'm not one of those people that uses the steering wheel and pedal peripherals. I just use, you know, the arrows and whatever buttons that, you know, that I need on that end of the keyboard. So, but long story short, folks, a Super Nintendo Mini would be awesome. Please, Nintendo, let this happen. And then stop right there, because we don't need an N64 Mini.
Not enough good game? No, anyway. Oh.
Nobody needs a Mini GoldenEye, folks.
Hey, GoldenEye just got remastered anyway.
Again?
No, not that long ago. Okay. Anyway.
Anyway, all right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back to close the show and announce the winner of the Logitech keyboard after this.
Welcome to the panic room. Now back to the show. Do you see how your patience paid off?
We are back here on the Nerd News Network, and for the last 3 weeks or so, we have been running this contest for the Logitech G810 keyboard. And we've received several entries. Basically, what you had to do is email us, mike@thisweekingeek.net at the time. Please don't email us now. The contest is over. We have picked a winner. Basically, email us, and in a Twitter update, 140 characters or less, tell us why you enjoy the Mass Effect franchise. We do have a winner. This is what the winner has said.
This was at Nightbeat, who said...
No.
Aw.
Bad Nightbeat. Go back to the dead universe, Nightbeat. Anyway, Mass Effect is science fiction, but it draws elements from magic and fantasy and integrates them seamlessly and believably into its sci-fi lore. This was said by Joshua Caleb. Joshua, you are the winner of the G810 keyboard from Logitech. Please email Mike Dodd, mike@thisweekingeek.net, with your address as soon as you hear this, because he will then have Logitech send the keyboard out to you.
Or just send him my address, and I will sell it.
You're fired.
Again, you have to pay me for me to be an employee, according to you.
Well, you know, we trumped around the dance card there a little while ago, so, you know, I had to bring up some sort of...
Yeah, you can be deported, but... if I were in the States, I'm not, so...
Yeah, you're not, so
actually,
that's not gonna...
Actually, I gotta renew my passport anyway, so...
Oh, crap, that's funny. Damn it, that's funny. Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for this week on Nerd News. Ryan and I are still doing the Transformers coverage over inside the pull bag on the Geekcast Radio Network. You go check that out. We've been talking about Not Rid, X-Rid, whatever you want to call that, the Transformers ongoing volumes 6 through 10, and More Than Meets the Eye volumes 6 through 10 in trade. We also talked about the event Combiner Wars as well. And that's what's going on there. We will catch you next time here on the Nerd News Network.
Oh, my work! Ruined! I hate Mondays!
Come here! I'm the best there is at what I do. And what I do can't be imitated, copied, cloned, or used without the express written permission of the Superhero Squad and Marvel Entertainment LLC. Batteries not included. All rights reserved. Terms, conditions, restrictions apply. We clear, bub.
Yes, sir.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.
Wanna see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show.
So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Remember, kids, buy pizza, pay with steak.
What's your social media business card? My fist.
Just give me a big box of beef.
Don't give them ideas.
Don't forget our other twig project, GeorgeLucasHasLostHisMind.com.
Does Jesus have Matrix powers?
I think the Pillsbury Doughboy is albino.
I'd like to see a cat on Tourette's.
That's the moment I give up on life. Because then I don't know what to believe in anymore. When the Amish start twittering, I'm done.
Can we leave this subject alone?
Hello.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh, no. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm confused. As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear Kyle Hebert say,
"Today the world, tomorrow the universe, next week my chiropractor, ay, my back."
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well as subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment about this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can also call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Or email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by PerpetualEmotionMachine.ca. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.